Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this program is World Watchers. It's a one-hour discussion of news. And as I've explained many times, and I forget sometimes, if you want a bibliography of information, the sources of where I obtain the material that I share with you on these broadcasts, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Mae, M-A-E, Brussel, like Brussels sprouts, P.O. Box 225 11 Carmel, California, 93922. Some of you have a pencil handy and take notes. Some forget to take notes or don't think of that in terms of listening to news analysis broadcasts. But I suggest it. And better than that, send for the bibliography sheet. And that way you can collect them and then see what these broadcasts are about and what they add up to. I'm going back in time just for one moment to start the program over with a speech that Honorable Larry McDonald gave in Congress regarding the murder of John Lennon right after he was murdered. Larry McDonald from Georgia got up on the floor of Congress, and this is the speech that he gave commemorating the murder of John Lennon. You can obtain this as this is in the Congressional Record. The truth is that the Beatles waged a frighteningly successful war on the values of Western civilization. The Beatles represented rebellion against authority. They promoted release from restraints. Their music screamed out against order. They glorified reaction to and revolution against the moral standards and lifestyles of the Judeo-Christian culture. In his lifestyle, music, philosophy, and influence, John Lennon failed the test of value and usefulness. His death will soon be forgotten, but his life will continue to yield its unholy fruits because of the many people he helped to influence. Indeed, the tragedy of John Lennon was his life. I bring that up because of remarks that our cabinet appointee, the head of the Department of Education, made this week, and I'm going to refer to those in a few minutes. But he accuses Lennon of screaming out against order, and the order is the name of the group of people, the Aryan Nations, the Nazis, the Silent Brotherhood, the group linked to the Waffen-SS in Germany and to Nazi networks all over the world, the few that are on trial up in Seattle, Washington, call themselves the order. And the American Revolution was a rebellion against authority. But Larry McDonald had a deep hatred, as did the people in the United States government that wanted to deport John Lennon. And this had been entered into the Congressional Record. Now, just this past week, Newsday, a friend from New York mailed me this story regarding Larry McDonald and another subject which touches off a lot of sensitive nerves at this time, and that's the disease AIDS. The article says, former Governor Lester Maddox said yesterday the test of his blood showed no signs of exposure to the virus suspected of causing AIDS, even though the serum he got from a cancer clinic in the Bahamas may have been tainted with the virus of AIDS. Maddox, once a symbol of Southern segregation, was diagnosed as having prostate cancer in 1982. He told reporters at his Marietta home in Georgia that the former U.S. Representative Larry McDonald, a urologist, recommended Dr. Lawrence Burton's Immunology Researching Center Limited in the Bahamas. McDonald died in the Korean plane shot down by the Soviets in 1983. The Bahamian government shut down the center this summer after its serum was found to contain the virus that caused acquired immune deficiency syndrome. So Larry McDonald, who had to stop medicine because of fraudulent medical practices that were under investigation and he should have been prosecuted and locked up for. And I have a lot more material on his medical practices that I haven't yet had time to put on the air. He's the one that was recommending that people go to this particular government agency in the Bahamas. It's not run by the government. It's a hospital in the Bahamas that the government shut down. But our Congressman, Larry McDonald, had told Mr. Lester Maddox, the former governor of Georgia, to go to that particular clinic. Now, regarding AIDS, I want to do more on that, the Rajneesh, the Bhagwan group up in Oregon this evening and also later. But I don't want, in case I lose track and don't get to that this evening, I just want to mention that Thursday, September the 17th, the San Jose Mercury has an article, suspected AIDS victim died at Guro's commune. A suspected AIDS victim died Wednesday at the commune of Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh, and explains Carl Gaskin, 43, of Dallas, Texas, who died of this AIDS. I think I mentioned before that they cremated him in a ceremony. They described it as a beautiful ceremony. But given the record of that group with their medicines, their plans to kill, their ability to put salmonella into food and poison, did they also have access to the AIDS virus similar to the one at the clinic in the Bahamas that a particular person could have? Now, Rock Hudson had surgery, bypass surgery, I think triple bypass, 3 years ago. And if you want to give somebody in Hollywood the disease and scare all of Hollywood, which is what is happening, and also wipe out a lot of artists of the theater, the stage, and screen, there wouldn't be a better way than to do it through this particular virus. And once they have surgery, if it has been isolated and the people at that hospital that can give it, I'm wondering if it could be transferred to him and be in his body at that time. I bring that up because Jack Anderson has a story just this morning in the Monterey Herald, Swine Flu Virus Fears. That's the title of it. Doesn't tell you much in the title. But the gist of it is this. He said medical researchers suspect that the federal government has been discouraging tests that might identify a deadly swine virus as the cause of AIDS. The government, number one, is discouraging the test, and U.S. officials have discounted the fact that there's any connection between African swine flu and AIDS, but they won't let people have access to the material that they have. The second point in his article is that a Dr. John Beldakis of Boston University told reporters that it took 3 months to get swine fever material from the reluctant government department officials who were holding back, and the agriculture officials criticized the work of implying that there were these connections and that this material was secret. Then he went on to say that he was ordered not to talk to the press about the inability to get information to try and work on this disease for what were called national security interests. Now, what national security reasons would there be for the agricultural department to not pass this on? And they thought that was a fear that the pigs, the animal, would be passed through pork and so forth if it wasn't cooked well enough. But I think there's a much more political implication to this. Then Jack Anderson said Dr. TEAS theorized about the connection of the swine flu to not directly causing the disease, but getting certain viruses under uncooked meat and then spreading it through sexual contact to visiting Americans in Haiti, particularly where two diseases, the swine flu and the AIDS, start out with similar symptoms of swollen lymph glands, and that's an important clue to another article I've had for a long time, and loss of appetite. Dr. Tease said that she was brushed off by the agricultural department officials and researchers because they didn't want a connection between the AIDS and the swine flu. She said when British researchers got positive results in the preliminary test, they were discouraged from further experimentation by the agricultural department and the doors, agriculture department, and the doors have been sort of blocked off to them. They treat you like you're crazy, complained Beldakis. That's not the way to do science. Human life is at stake. How well I know that, because the researchers who've done work into the political assassinations, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and maybe 100 others, and the relationship of those things, we're always treated by various politicians, even the liberal Democrats, as if we're crazy, but in the scientific field, they're holding back because of the investigation. Incidentally, going back to November 1979, I have a story, man receives death sentence in murder by cancer case. And the prosecutor said this was the first murder by cancer. Well, I think Jack Ruby was a murder by cancer and Martha Mitchell, but this is the first that went to court. And they found that this person that was convicted, Stephen Roy Harper, put cancer-causing rocket fuel additive into drinks, into milk and lemonade, and that he contaminated them by dimethyl nitrosamine, an anti-corrosive rocket fuel additive that causes cancer in animals. Now, the lethal substance was taken from Epley Institute for Cancer Research, where the person who administered it was a lab assistant. This is from Omaha, Nebraska. Whatever Epley Institute for Cancer Research does, evidently you can't taste it. It's a rocket fuel, and it's given as a food, and this was the first conviction for a murder by cancer. Another story I have going back to 1977 regarding this disease, it has to do with a cancer experimentation project done by our Environmental Protection Agency, not much different than the Agriculture Department, the environmental, and it was done by, in a hospital, de Gineco, G-I-N-E-C-O, Obstetrica, Mexico City. I mention the hospital because you may read about it in some other incidences that may come up. In 1975, the Environmental Protection Agency was using a hospital in Mexico, not in America. This is at the time of Watergate, and after that when Senator Frank Church was exposing these various mind control and medical experiments that were going on, so it was moved to Mexico. The taxpayers in the United States were putting up approximately $100,000, and the money had already been approved. And at the last moment, an attorney, Jeffrey Howard, caught on to what was happening in the situation. The Mexican officials approved, and the test was on thyroid, using the thyroid to give massive doses of cancer-causing fungicides to see what effect it would have on the human thyroid. So the thyroid comes into that, and also in the other article on the Agriculture Department, the disease's effect, the swollen lymph glands, and those two are related. So the U.S. pharmaceutical firms, the large major pharmaceutical firms, were using these people for testing, and they were giving them fungicides known chemically as EBDC to be fed to humans. So in Mexico, in 1976, American taxpayers were paying for food to be put into the bodies of humans for cancer so the pharmaceutical firms can work on it. These were fungicides, and the other was a form of rocket fuel, one out of a cancer clinic in Nebraska, the other one run in Mexico by the Environmental Protection Agency. There's a book out called A Higher Form of Killing. David Emery up north, KFJC, has done an hour on tape. He has a cassette on AIDS. If you want to order that, you can. You can write to me, and I'll give you his address. I didn't bring it in with me this evening. He's done an hour on AIDS, and he called attention to this book, A Higher Form of Killing, The Secret Story of Chemical and Biological Warfare. It was published in 1982. And in this book, just at the conclusion, at the very last pages, they talk about the United States Army going back as early as 1962. 40 scientists were employed at the U.S. Army Biological Warfare Laboratory on full-time genetics research. Many others, they said, would appreciate the implications of genetics for their own work. The implications were made more specific 7 years later. 1962 is when they started it. But 7 years later, a Department of Defense spokesman claimed that genetic engineering could solve one of the major disadvantages of biological warfare in that they could limit their disease to what would occur naturally in another part of the world. They could have it within their hands. Within the next 5 to 10 years, it would probably be possible to make a new infective microorganism which could differ in certain important respects from any known disease-causing organisms. Most important of these is it might be refractory to the immunological and therapeutic process upon which we depend to maintain our relative freedom from infectious disease. So what they were planning is going back approximately to the time period now where it's really surfacing or began to surface was to have a disease that singled out certain people, because if you had a large disease or biological warfare, it would take the people away that you wanted to survive, but they could change it and affect the immunological and therapeutic processes by working around with an infective microorganism. This book also, Higher Form of Killing, talks about an explosion that took place in the Soviet Union, and then there was an outbreak of anthrax. In April 1979, there was an explosion at a military settlement, and then the wind blew on people in the villages, and they began to die at a tremendous rate. And Robert Moss, who was a columnist with the London Daily Telegraph, picked up this story and began the justification for a lot of biological research in the United States, which was going on already, as you know, for a long, long time. Robert Moss is the co-partner of Arnaud de Borchgrave, the two ministers of propaganda, anti-Soviet propaganda, and de Borchgrave is the editor of the Washington Times for Reverend Moon. So it was Moss who was picking up this material, and also it was published in Bild Zeitung. That is that magazine coming out of Germany, linked to General Walker and the far right and the Gestapo SS material that I've done in the last few weeks, and I'm going to update in the next week or so. But they studied the outbreak of the anthrax and what happened with the people who were touching the contaminated food. But as I've said, with the rocket fuel that was fed people in Nebraska and also the food that was being tested in Mexico, it seems to be a more concerted, positive effort to give cancer, not through the air, but could these explosions, such as took place in the Soviet Union, spread these diseases? And this book, The Higher Form of Killing, goes into that selective desire that the United States always had and worked on to single out certain people for diseases. I had studies of that in my files. I have them going way back to studying the blacks and the Indian and the Jew and the Mexican and the Oriental, and finding particular things that appeal to their kind of blood system, that you could knock them out and other people could take and ingest foods at supermarkets and they wouldn't die, but the one segment of the population would die. And this book refers to those studies. It says man's increasing understanding of the delicate mechanism which makes life possible may also solve the problem of how to design a weapon to kill an enemy. And in this case, it is the white fundamentalists in this country killing the minorities or the similar in Europe, but particularly in this country. Their effort, the Pentagon, was to leave friendly troops unharmed. In particular, military scientists might rekindle their interest in ethnic weapons designed to affect only selected racial groups. An American military manual noted the possibility in 1975. It is possible to develop a so-called ethnic chemical weapon which would be designed to exploit naturally occurring differences in vulnerability among specific population groups. Thus, such a weapon would be capable of incapacitating or killing a selected enemy population to a significantly greater extent the population of friendly forces. Many of the naturally occurring differences are well known. The inability of the digestive systems of particular racial groups to cope with the food of other group, for example. The differences go further. In the United States, where most of the research is being conducted, it has been established that within the American Indian population, 95% of Cherokee Indians have type O blood. 85% of Blackfeet Indians have type A blood. It is reasonable to suppose that other similar differences occur among less advanced society, meaning Chicano and Black and the Jew. Certainly, during the Vietnam War, the so-called Advanced Projects Research Agency, an elite group of scientists working for the Pentagon, was employed to carry out blood tests on selected groups of Asians with a view to preparing a map portraying the geographic distribution of blood groups and other inherited blood characters. The Pentagon claimed the project was solely to establish the food requirements of the American and Allied troops. Now, the Aryan Nations, I believe I had on the air last week, had charted off a map, or I read in one of the stories recently, charted off a map of the United States where the blacks and Chicanos, Indians, and Jews, those pockets of populations exist. And then they should move north to areas that are cleansed of these people and see these kinds of things can be put into the food. Now, going down to India, the Union Carbide factory explosion in Bhopal, India, there was a story in the Sacramento Bee just this last October. The poison gas leak from Union Carbide factory in Bhopal, India, that killed some 1,700 people, may have permanently damaged the immune system in the 200,000 injured, a researcher says. Now, this is similar to the explosion in the Soviet Union that happened. Then following the explosion, you could say, well, being as there was this explosion, this many people got sick from this disease. Dr. Carroll, an immunologist at the University of Pittsburgh, was presenting a paper on her research to the American Chemical Society in Chicago. She was commissioned by the Indian government to study the effect of the leak of methyl isocyanate, December 3, 1984, from the ruptured valve. And she made a study of these people and said the people that were injured from the leak may have long-term damage to their immune system. And that would be one of the consequences of that particular leak. Now, another story in the Houston Post, July the 7th, 1985, sent to me by a friend who clips hundreds of articles every week and dates them for me from Houston. It says, firm says product was misused. The farmer blames Union Carbide for tainted watermelon crops in California, Kern County, in Alaska, Oregon, Washington, and California, Utah, British Columbia. This particular part on the West Coast, farmers blame the carbide for tainted watermelons, and we've talked about that before, and Aldicarb that was on these melons, and a farmer said that he had used this for growing cotton 4 years ago. The brand name was Temic. It was made by Union Carbide, and it was produced in India by the Bhopal factory, and it affected the food this summer. We had all kinds of poison foods, the broccoli and sprays on the lettuce, and particularly the melons, and they were singled out. You know, this is one in the cheese food and milk, problems with the milk. Alaska, Oregon, Washington, and California, Utah, and British Columbia have had this problem with the melons, and I wonder if there is any chemical similar to the ones that this man was charged for from the lab in Nebraska included in this that would affect the body later and the immune system if the same chemical in India was changing the immune system there. Now, there's a new book out I haven't seen on the stand yet. It's called Flowering of the Bamboo, and there's an article about it in the Washington Post early this year. And it has to do, again, with America and chemicals and how far back our interest goes. The article is titled, Japan's Oldest Death Row Inmate May Be Innocent. The title is so misleading that many of you might have missed this, and I didn't see it anywhere else but the Washington Post. This is from Tokyo. The U.S. government has now released new documents. Imagine, this is 1985, from 40 years ago, that have to do with a celebrated resident on Japan's death row, Mr. Sadamichi Hirasawa, who's been waiting execution for 30 years because of a conviction in 1948 of a mass murder at a Tokyo bank. The papers support his family's assertion that the murders were probably committed by veterans of a secret chemical and germ warfare unit of the disbanded Japanese Imperial Army. Now, this is the unit that Charles Willoughby, I think he was a general, we'll call him a general, I want to say colonel, but Charles Willoughby, the chief of all intelligence for General Douglas MacArthur, who was one of the founders with Ronald Reagan of Young Americans for Freedom with William Buckley. Willoughby was the commanding officer who said, don't prosecute these people, we will use their experiments for the future. And what happened is he was there with those experiments when they learned about them when the war was over, and probably using them while the war was going on, was that America would use their expertise and therefore nobody should be prosecuted. Now, getting back to this case, they say that the chemicals, the secret chemical in germ warfare, was used by the Japanese Imperial Army. The papers have detailed the role of the murder investigation by the United States military occupation headquarters in post-war Japan and were submitted recently to a Tokyo court to support a petition for a new trial for Mr. Hirasawa, who's now 93 years old, the oldest resident on Japan's death row. He would be 1 year younger than Hitler if Hitler is alive. After the war, the United States granted members of the Japanese unit immunity from war crimes. That was Charles Willoughby, Mr. Carl Weidenbach. It was his real name. Immunity from war crimes prosecution in return for data from their experiments. This did not become generally known in Japan until the 1970s when the newspapers here wrote extensively on the subject. Hirasawa supporters have contended that the Americans, fearful of exposure of the unit's operations and their decision not to prosecute, have ordered the Japanese police to stop the investigation of the unit. But the documents didn't assert that in that much. They weren't spelled out in those words, but those were the beliefs of the people supporting Mr. Hirasawa, that it was suppressed because they didn't want the Americans to know how much we use experiments. Hirasawa, now in failing health, was convicted of the Imperial Bank incident January 26, 1948. On that afternoon, a man posing as a Japanese health inspector went to the Tokyo branch of the bank and told the 16 employees, to drink this particular poison by telling them it was a medicine that was preventing an epidemic and that they were to take it. The man fled with money from the safe. The employees lay wreathing on the floor and 12 died. Hirasawa was arrested 6 months later and a forced confession came, citing police coercion at the time. He was convicted and sentenced to death. In 1955, the Japanese Supreme Court upheld the conviction and he entered death row. The execution never took place. Outside the prison, a support group has been campaigning for decades for his freedom. One of the first and key contention is that prosecutors never explain how Hirasawa, a professional artist, obtained poison and was so well-versed in its dosage and effects and the psychology of inducing people to drink it. The U.S. documents were obtained by writer William Triplett, T-R-I-P-L-E-T-T. His book about the bank crime and the investigation is called Flowering of the Bamboo. It's supposed to be released this fall. It should be coming out now by Woodbine House, a Washington publisher. Two documents detail a Tokyo meeting attended by the U.S. Japanese officials and the chief Japanese detective in the case. According to the documents, Fujita told the group that the best police leads were people who had been linked to a secret Japanese Army chemical laboratory, which was used by the United States, where experiments were perfected in the use of prussic acid, the poison used at the bank robbery, Imperial Bank robbery. Techniques for using the poison were published in Army pamphlets, and the robber used the identical method. This is what they tried to say he used. They were in the Army manuals. And so this poor guy, 93, he's still in jail, but our use of chemicals as a weapon continued after the war. If America didn't use it before, we brought the expertise of Joseph Mengele and the Japanese Army and the scientists right into our Air Force, into Fort Derrick, Maryland, and began the research. So, therefore, the secrecy and the title National Security that Jack Anderson speaks about today has to do with the same national security that got this fellow locked up, and because the Army and the Japanese Army worked together on these medical experiments. Now, the Interpol, international police, are having their annual meeting, and Attorney General Edwin Meese is going to lend the prestige of his office to this particular meeting. This is a San Francisco Examiner article on Edwin Meese planning a meeting with the international crime experts. Attorney General Edwin Meese will lend his prestige of office, whatever prestige Meese has, today in the opening meeting of the International Criminal Police Organization known as Interpol. It was once boycotted by the United States because some of the leaders have been former Nazis. That's a total lie. It wasn't boycotted by the United States at all. 500 Interpol officers, experts from 100 countries, are going to be working. Meese described Interpol as a worldwide association of police forces created in 1923 to promote mutual assistance in detecting and suppressing international crime. Edwin Meese might know for his speech when he speaks there. It was formed by Adolf Hitler in Vienna in 1923, and the Gestapo was formed just at that time. The United States National Central Bureau, which communicates with Interpol, comes under the jurisdiction of the Justice Department, and the president of Interpol this past year has been Secret Service Chief John Simpson, first United States president elected to the Interpol meeting. Asked specifically about Paul Dickoff, a former Nazi SS officer with Interpol, Mr. Simpson said there are many people who, unfortunately, for one reason or another, were involved in various parts of the Nazi military apparatus and police apparatus during that period of time, maybe for their own self-interest, I'm not sure. When asked about Nazi SS Reinhard Heydrich, who also was president of Interpol from 1940 until his assassination in 1942, he was succeeded by Ernest Kaltenbrunner, chief of the Nazi security police, who was executed as a war criminal. Interpol has 136 member countries. Also, after the war was over, Mr. Dickoff of the Waffen-SS was the head of the Interpol. The United States has been part of it, and J. Edgar Hoover got his appointment as director of the FBI was put in by Herbert Hoover, and he was vice president of Interpol and worked with all the Nazis until they began to invade Poland, or until after Pearl Harbor, when it wasn't right for American head of the Justice Department investigation branch, the FBI, to be that close to the Nazis. So there was about a three-year lapse until 1945 when we picked up again with them. They don't find former Nazis. They don't find the drug traffickers. In fact, they hardly find anybody. Interpol is international police. It's exactly what it means. We'll take a one-minute break now, and then I'll come back to some other current news items that relate to past events also.